Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading with you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, for July 5th and 6th. I hope you all had a really wonderful Independence Day celebration. In my neighborhood, they're still shooting off things, but anyway. For what it's worth, we're going to start today on the first page with the following headline. Former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. visits Tilton. Jackson visited with locals to assess needs and weigh possible new run. By reporter Kayla White. Dateline Tilton. Former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. paid a visit to Tilton Sunday, June 29th. The visit, part of Jackson's goal to learn more about the needs of downstate communities, included a tour of the town with Mayor Bill Weir. The tour included a stop at Lupita's Family Restaurant, a beloved staple of the small town. It was such an honor to meet Mr. Jackson, said Alex Rodriguez, one of the owners of the establishment. He came to town to see what we might need and how he could help. Jackson, the son of civil rights activist Jesse Jackson, previously served as the U.S. representative from Illinois' 2nd Congressional District from 1996 till 2012. He said his visit to Tilton came about after he reached out to Ware and other mayors in the area. I want to get to know their communities and to overcome any misunderstandings and open a dialogue, Jackson said. I want to meet with people and listen to what the issues and needs are and see if I might bridge some gaps and do my part on bringing people together. Other than visiting Lupita's, Jackson also took the opportunity to visit with Ware's mother, Janet, to congratulate her on turning 83 years old that day. It was a complete shock to me, Janet said. About noon, my son said, "Answer the back door." I opened the door and there he stood. I was in awe. She described Jackson as a delight. He's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, but there was no clash whatsoever. It didn't make a difference, she said. Our conversation was so pleasant. We talked about politics, local government, and the local economy. The two also talked about Janet's beloved husband, who passed 2 years ago. When he left, he said a prayer with us. How many other politicians do you know would take the time to say a prayer with the family? But he did, she said. I've never met a politician like Jackson. He was so down to earth. When he came here, he was us. He was interested, she said. For Jackson, too, the trip was a success. We overcame some of the misunderstandings that city people and downstate people sometimes have, Jackson said, adding that Ware had blessed him with some homegrown greens on his way out. Ware was kind enough to give me 5 or 6 pounds of collard greens that he grows in his backyard and told me to come back anytime, Jackson said, laughing. Other than Tilton, Jackson plans to take a tour of Westville with the new mayor, Tony Strubbins, soon, and he said he's hoping to visit other communities in the area, too. Then and now. After Jackson won a special election in 1995 in order to fill the vacancy created by the resignation of previous Representative Mel Reynolds, Jackson was reelected 8 times between 1996 and 2012 before he resigned from Congress in November of that year, citing health issues. That same year, Jackson was accused of misusing campaign funds to pay for personal purchases, a violation of federal law. He pleaded guilty to these charges as well as to one of wire and mail fraud in February of 2013. For these crimes, he was sentenced to 30 months in prison in August 13, 2013, and was released in March of 2015. In his book, The Finger of God, Jackson described his time in prison as one of the best things that happened to me, saying that his personal experience gave me the fire of radical empathy and a new American truth. Despite his past, Jackson said he is reflective and contemplating on whether to run for Congress again next year. I made mistakes. America is one of the most amazing nations in the history of the world that believes in new life. It believes in redemption, in its own constitution, both at the federal and state level, Jackson said. Since his release, Jackson said he has been articulating for millions of men and women who paid their debt to society that they too should be forgiven. He reiterated that his visit to the area was not a campaigning call, but rather an opportunity to learn more about the needs of the people in downstate Illinois that are so often overlooked by upstate politicians. Continuing with news on the front page and looking kind of more nationally is this headline. House gives final approval to Trump's big tax bill, sends it to him to sign. And this is courtesy of the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. House Republicans propelled President Donald Trump's $4.5 trillion tax breaks and spending cuts bill to final congressional passage on Thursday, overcoming multiple setbacks to approve his signature's second-term policy package before a 4th of July deadline. The tight roll call, 218 to 214, came at a potentially high political cost, with two Republicans joining all Democrats opposed. GOP leaders worked overnight, and the president himself leaned on a handful of skeptics to drop their opposition and send the bill to him to sign into law. Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York delayed voting by holding the floor for more than 8 hours with a record-breaking speech against the bill. "We have a big job to finish," said House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican Louisiana. "With one big, beautiful bill, we're going to make this country stronger, safer, and more prosperous than ever before." The outcome delivers a milestone for the president by his Friday goal and for his party. It was a long-shot effort to compile a lengthy list of GOP priorities into what he called his one big, beautiful bill, an 800-plus page measure. With Democrats unified in opposition, the bill will become a defining measure of Trump's return to the White House, aided by Republican control of Congress. Tax breaks and safety net cuts. At its core, the package priority is $4.5 trillion in tax breaks enacted in 2017 during Trump's first term that would expire if Congress failed to act, along with new ones. This includes allowing workers to deduct tips and overtime pay, and a $6,000 deduction for most older adults earning less than $75,000 a year. There's also a hefty investment, some $350 billion, in national security and Trump's deportation agenda, and to help develop the Golden Dome defensive system over the U.S. To help offset the lost tax revenue, the package includes $1.2 trillion in cutbacks to the Medicaid, health care, and food stamps, largely by imposing new work requirements, including for some parents and older people, and a major rollback of green energy tax credits. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates the package will add $3.3 trillion to the deficit over the decade, and 11.8 million more people will go without health coverage. This is a generational opportunity to deliver the most comprehensive and consequential set of conservative reforms in modern history, and that's exactly what we're doing, said Representative Jody Arrington, a Republican from Texas, the House Budget Committee chairman. Democrats united against ugly bill. Democrats unified against the bill as a tax giveaway to the rich, paid for on the backs of the working class and most vulnerable in society, what they call trickle-down cruelty. Tensions ran high in the chamber. Jeffries began his speech at 4:53 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time and finished at 1:37 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 8 hours and 44 minutes later, a record as he argued against what he called Trump's big, ugly bill. "We're better than this," Jeffries said, who used a leader's prerogative for unlimited debate and read letter after letter from Americans writing about their reliance on the health care programs. "I never thought that I'd come on the House floor saying that this is a crime scene," Jeffries said. "It's a crime scene going after the health and safety and well-being of the American people. And as Democrats," he said, "we want no part of it." Hauling the package through the Congress has been difficult from the start. Republicans have struggled mightily with the bill nearly every step of the way, quarreling in the House and Senate, and often succeeding only by the narrowest of margins, just one vote. The Senate passed the packages days earlier, with Vice President J.D. Vance breaking the tie vote. The slim majority in the House of Republicans left little room for defections. Political costs of saying no. Despite their discomfort with various aspects of the sprawling package, in some ways it became too big to fail, in part because Republicans found it difficult to buck Trump. As Wednesday's stalled floor action dragged overnight, Trump rallied against the delays. What are the Republicans waiting for?" the president said in a midnight post. "What are you trying to prove?" Johnson relied heavily on White House cabinet secretaries, lawyers, and others to satisfy skeptical GOP holdouts. Moderate Republicans worried about the severity of cuts while conservatives pressed for steeper reductions. Lawmakers said they were being told by the administration that they could provide executive actions, projects, or other provisions in their districts back home. The alternative was clear. Republicans who staked out opposition to the bill, including Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky and Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, were being warned by Trump's well-funded political operation. Tillis soon after announced he would not seek re-election. Rollback of past presidential agendas. In many ways, the package is a repudiation of the agendas of the last two Democratic presidents, a chiseling away of the Medicaid expansion from Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act, and a pullback of Joe Biden's climate change strategies in the Inflation Reduction Act. Democrats have described the bill in dire terms, warning that cost of Medicaid, which some 80 million Americans rely on, would result in lives lost. Food stamps that help feed more than 40 million people would rip food from the mouths of hungry children, hungry veterans, and hungry seniors, Jeffries said. Republicans say the tax breaks will prevent a tax hike on households and grow the economy. They maintain they're trying to right-size the safety net programs for the population that were initially designed to serve, mainly pregnant women, the disabled, and children, and root out what they describe as waste, fraud, and abuse. The Tax Policy Center, which provides nonpartisan analysis of tax and budget policy, projected the bill would result next year in a $150 tax break for the lowest quintile of Americans, a $1,750 tax cut for the middle, and a $10,950 tax cut for the top quintile. That's compared to what they would face if the 2017 tax cuts expired. Well, bringing things back to very close to home, let's take a look at the off-road adventure scheduled for July 26th in Attica, Indiana. The Illinois and Indiana chapters of the Land Improvement Contractors of America will have its upcoming LICA, that's the Land Improvement Contractors of America, off-road adventure at the Badlands in Attica, Indiana on Saturday, July 26th. Contractors, members, and their families and friends are invited to attend this all-ages event held at one of the largest off-road parks in the Midwest. With more than 1,400 plus acres of multi-directional diverse terrain, the Badlands Off-Road Park features sand dunes, wooded trails, gravel, mud, and rocks, trails and terrain for all types of skill levels of riders, bikers, ATVs, SUVs, 4x4s, and side-by-sides are welcome, a news release states. The event starts at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, where riders and drivers will meet up at a designated parking lot and head out to explore all the park has to offer in groups or independently, where they can choose their own comfort level with terrain challenges and thrills. Lunch is available on-site for purchase. Once riders and drivers are accounted for and rigs are ready for a break at the end of the day, attendees are invited to a catered barbecue dinner starting at 4. At the clubhouse, where they can share their riding stories while connecting with fellow members and off-road enthusiasts. Following dinner, Illinois LICA will hold a brief members meeting. For more information and to register by July 11th, visit illica.net/events or call Illinois LICA at 309-932-1230. In more local events, Thompson Community Day is set for July 27th. The City of Danville and Human Relations Commission have announced the 31st Mary Thompson Community Day. Community Day will be held on July 27th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Lincoln Park. Community Day will feature a free meal, performances from local artists such as Candy Foster, and activities for children. This free event is open to the public and was organized to celebrate the community and bring positivity and pride to the city. A few other events you might want to get on your calendar. Taps on Tuesday meets. This week's Taps on Tuesday program will feature Sherry and Robert House. They will talk about a memory stone placed in the Soldier's Circle honoring World War I soldier Wayman Mayberry, who was killed in action. Anita Zoller will sound taps in his honor and for all those who have served. Tara Outer, Greg Green, Larry Weatherford, and Rebecca Woodrum will also participate in the program. The program will be held at Spring Hill Cemetery Soldiers Circle starting at 6 p.m. This is on Tuesday, presented by the Vermilion County War Museum and the Ward Hill Layman Civil War Roundtable. Bingo Night returns on July 8th. Again, these are just fun things to get on your calendar. The VFW Post 2395 in Covington, Indiana now has bingo for the public on the second and fourth Tuesday nights of the month. The post is located at 1212 Liberty Street in Covington. Doors open at 5 p.m. This is Eastern Standard Time, with the games beginning at 6:30. Snacks and drinks are available, but feel free to bring your own. The cost is $25 for 21 games. And Wonder of Junction VBS is planned. Danville First Nazarene Church will have its annual VBS, or Vacation Bible School, on Sunday, July 20th through Thursday, July 24th at the church at 2214 North Vermilion Street. The fun begins each evening at 5:30 and goes until 8. Children will take a journey through the Old West as they learn about who Jesus is, marvel at his birth, his childhood, his ministry, his death and resurrection, and his coming return. The fun includes arts and crafts, singing, recreation, snacks, and more. And to register, you can go ahead and visit https at dfcnaz.churchcenter.com. Lots of stuff coming up in town. As we've reached the midpoint of our time together today, let's take a look at our death notices. These obituaries were received by 5 p.m. on Friday. In Danville, Melody Alice Williams, age 71, passed away on July 2nd at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Her visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, July 8th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Her service will be at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 9th at the funeral home with Pastor Patty Wise officiating. In Tilton, Pamela Fawn Jamison, age 76, passed away on July 2nd at her home surrounded by family. Her service will be at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, July 8th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center's Urbiscent Chapel in Westville, with Pastor Gary Milton officiating. Her burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park at a later date. In Lebanon, Pennsylvania, we got word of the death of Terry David Woodward, age 67, who passed away peacefully on June 21st, and no other information is provided at this time. From Kingman, Indiana, Alan Melvin Moody, age 88, passed away on Saturday, June 28th at Wellbrook of Crawfordsville, Indiana. Visitation was held on Saturday, July 5th at the Gooch Funeral Home in Rockville, Indiana, and his services were on Saturday, July 5th at 2 p.m. We send our prayers to all of the families of those that have passed recently. The editorial page is busy today, but let's look for something that might be of interest to all of us. I think one that you might enjoy is from Dr. Richard Elkheimer, Up Close with Dr. E, and his title is How Summer Activities Bring Families Together. When we were raising our children, June always found my wife and I making lists of summer possibilities so our family could have fun during the summer. We learned that if plans were not made early, time runs out, and here comes fall with the crush of school. Our list was broken down into two categories, big and little. Big included longer trips to cities such as Chicago, Indianapolis, or St. Louis. Little is day trips or activities such as fishing, camping, and hiking. As we made plans, my mind returned to powerful memories of my own childhood summers. My mother always repeated the same phrase whenever we took a summer trip or did a summer activity: we are building memories. What piece of wisdom did she know about life that every family could learn from? She knew this: the brain of a child does not treat all memories equally. Only those memories which are welded to powerful emotions are forever stored. Like iridescent mental tattoos illuminated by black light, the emotional colors of our early childhood, green, gold, violet, luminous yellow, paint the walls of the house where children's development resides. Our memories are the foundation of our lives, for good or bad. If a child experiences an early family life of safety and kindness, then the other feelings, excitement, joy, awe, and love can grow. As adults, when life knocks us down, as it inevitably does, we lose hope. When that happens, we can toss down a bucket into our well of childhood memories and draw out pure, clean, cool water to end our drought and restore us to a place of peace. My mother knew all of this without a degree in neuroscience. She knew what children needed. And so my mind drifts further back to age 12. I spent my first 12 summers outside. We lived next to a creek, and I loved to explore, run through the trails, and build forts. And my passion, fishing. In the morning after breakfast, I'd grab my fishing pole and worms and run down to the creek to catch bluegills, sunfish, and catfish. At noon, my mother would signal us. Her whistle would travel half a mile, that lunch was ready. No other cook could compete with my mother's food. My wife agrees to this day. Pork chops with brown sugar, meatloaf, homemade cakes, and cookies. Our house always smelled like a bakery. Neighborhood children would show up at lunch and dinner time to enjoy her homemade treats. Sunset signaled the end of my childhood day. If I had caught enough bluegills, she'd fry them up. If I'd gathered enough mulberries, she'd make a pie. We always ate dinner together, and we talked and listened to each other. Never once was there a television on during dinner. Yes, we did take family trips over the summer, but truthfully, the best of my memories didn't involve big travel trips. They involved being with my family and my parents, spending lots of time with us over the summer. I can now see how my mother connected us each summer and how, just like her baking, she'd knead the dough of our family into a harmonious circle. My wife and I discussed our big and little plans for the summer with our kids. Guess what? The big list was empty, and the little list was full of things to do. canoe trips or hiking trails at Turkey Run, pitching a tent in our backyard, bike riding, and of course, fishing. My daughter caught her first 2-pound bass ever when she was 10. Will she remember this forever? Yes. What exactly has her mind stored? She's built a memory of fishing with her dad, the excitement of the bass strike, her dad yelling, "Keep your pole up," and her mom saying, "Wow, that's bigger than any fish your dad's ever caught." I remember as I growled at my wife's comment, I thought, "Where is our son?" Two explosions ripped the air above my head, and I heard his laughter as two bottle rockets soared overhead. That is what summer's all about. Time to be with your family at a more relaxed pace, so you can build the memories of having fun, loving each other, and being connected. The content of this article is for educational purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for treatment by a professional. And this again was our editorial comments today by Up Close with Dr. E. I know a lot of you enjoy the historical content that the commercial news is so good about bringing, especially local history. And there's no other writer that really speaks to these days of old and to some of this local history than Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. And I haven't read from him for a couple of weeks, so we're going to bring him back today with the headline of Twain Fails to Impress in Danville. Mark Twain, the subject of a new 1,033-page biography by Ron Chernow, has been called the Lincoln of our literature, but his January 1869 lecture in Danville left some folks unimpressed. Mr. S. L. Clemens, better known as Mark Twain, is not very pleasant as a speaker, his voice being feeble, the Danville Commercial reported on February 4, 1869. His utterance, however, is distinct, and his manner natural, and his rendering of his peculiar style of humor was often irresistibly droll. The lecture was delivered in Lincoln Hall, which stood just west of the public square on the south side of Main Street. Twain lectured in more than 40 towns and cities as the American Vandal Abroad. In 1867, he had toured Europe and the Holy Land with a group of Americans eager to absorb some old world culture. His wild satirical accounts appeared first in newspapers, then in the book The Innocents Abroad. It initially outsold more famous later works, including Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. Like Charles Dickens with the Pickwick Papers, Twain gained his initial fame as a humorist, but evolved into a blistering social critic. The lecture that brought him to Danville was called The American Vandal Abroad because of his irreverent references to doltish American tourists scratching their initials on or stealing parts of Greek ruins, ancient antiquities from Egypt, and French cathedrals. Several passages in the lecture were very famous. For instance, his description of the Sphinx of beautiful Venice, the Cathedral of Milan and Athens by moonlight from the Acropolis, the Danville Commercial reported. But it added as a whole, the lecture did not quite come up to our expectations. In The Innocents Abroad and his lectures, Twain shared the unique prejudices of the American middle class toward foreign people, storied locations, and sacred objects. "I'm glad the old masters are dead," he said, "and I only wish they had died sooner. Venice would be a fine city if it were only drained," he observed. He described the sumptuous palace of Versailles this way: "Nothing is small, nothing is cheap, the statues are all large." Even precious religious relics were fair game. After touring countless churches, cathedrals, and basilicas, Twain claimed to have seen enough wood and nails from the True Cross to build a house. Platform lectures were big business across America following the Civil War. People turned out in droves to be entertained by good speakers. In late 1868, for example, the famous black leader Frederick Douglass also spoke in Danville's Lincoln Hall. A few weeks later, humorist Josh Billings spoke there to uproarious laughter. Then came Mark Twain. His lectures were a little more subdued, delivered deadpan with long, pregnant pauses not appreciated by everybody. He returned to Danville on December 28, 1871 to deliver colorful vignettes from his latest book, Roughing It. It dealt with his often comical stagecoach journey from Missouri to Nevada Territory and its futile efforts to strike it rich as a silver miner. That particular lecture tour is well known to Twain's many followers. After appearing in Danville, he lectured in Mattoon on December 29th and in Paris on December 30th. In his Paris hotel, he met an uninhibited, super-talkative black servant boy that he dubbed Social Jimmy in a sketch that he wrote about him. Jimmy, he wrote, was the most artless, sociable, and exhaustless talker I've ever came across. Some Twain scholars believe that Twain based Huckleberry Finn's distinctive speech rhythms on those of Jimmy. Twain's skilled, innovative uses of vernacular and regional dialects help make Huck Finn timeless. Both boys are naive and open, engaging and bright, he said. They free associate with remarkable energy and verve. With Huck Finn, biographer Chernow wrote, he gave voice to the buried portion of the population, the commoners unheard and unseen in the polite English East Coast precincts of Hartford and Boston. He would revolutionize the American novel by scrapping the omniscient third-person narrator and allowing the unlettered Huck to tell the tale in his own voice, showing how expressive colloquial language could be. The steady flow of Huck's chatter would mirror the steady flow of the raft coursing down the Mississippi River, and his speech patterns may have sprung from those of a talkative black boy in the Paris House Hotel in Paris, Illinois. And again, this came to us from Kevin Cullen. With lots of baseball going on, let's take a little check in to see what's going on with our Danville Post 210. In a split decision, Danville beats Crawfordsville and falls to Alton in the TB24 tourney. This was brought to us by Ted Dare. Depending on your perspective, the Danville Post 210 speakers were either fortunate or unlucky to go 1-1 in the opening game at the TB24 Memorial Tournament at Gruber Park. On one hand, Post 210 didn't have a single run-producing hit in 14 innings. All four runs that Danville scored in a 4-3 victory over Crawfordsville in the opening game came either a squeeze bunt or a sacrifice fly. The speakers weren't as lucky in the second game, falling 1-0 on a three-hit shutout by Alton's Drake Champlain. On the other hand, the speakers had three pitchers, Pedro Rangel IV, Ryan Edwards, and Caden Klemenik, combined to hold Crawfordsville and Alton to just 6 hits in 13 innings while striking out 14 and allowing just 4 runs, only 2 earned. That is not what we'd hoped for, said Danville outfielder Jordan Johnson, whose sacrifice fly in the 7th inning gave the speakers the 4-3 win over Crawfordsville. You can't do much when you don't produce any runs. Caden threw well enough to hold, holding them to just 1 run. Klemenik still thought they could have done better. They got that 1 run on a squeeze bunt. There wasn't anything we could do about it, said Klemenik after the perfectly executed bunt by Alton's Dane Goeder. It was a double by Ryan Lois that I would have liked to have had back. Danville manager Brent Hart saw things a little differently. He pointed to a missed opportunity to take the lead in the second inning that he felt cost the speakers a chance of their second victory on Friday. We had 2 chances to score the run there, Hart said. Zach Russell failed to get the bunt down, and he battled with 2 strikes and a hit what should have been a sac fly to right. I had just told the runner that we were tagging on anything to the outfield. It was just a mental lapse, and ultimately it cost us a chance at the game. In another story that from our sports section today, the new AD excited about opportunities at Oakwood by Chad Dare and Fithian. If you build it, he will come is one of the most famous movie quotes of all time. But many people, including new Oakwood athletics director Richard Vetter, make a small change in the wording. If you build it, they will come, is what Vetter said about the possibility of new athletic facilities at Oakwood in the future. That's the one thing that everyone's talked about, Vetter said. Upgrading the facilities is the number one thing on everyone's list, but that's not an overnight thing. Learning about the district and seeing the pictures of the proposed facility made my jaw drop. This is a fun time to get into this district with all the things they want to do. Vetter was recently named the new athletic director and assistant principal, replacing Zach Steele, who was promoted to principal at Oakwood. I actually applied for this position 3-4 years ago, and I was lacking the experience, Vetter admitted. The past 3 years, I've been at Unity West Elementary, where I taught physical education, but I also got a chance to serve in different administrative roles as a substitute. But why become an AD when Vetter had previously coached wrestling and soccer at St. Joe Ogden? When I went to North Central in my first year, I had a coach become an AD, and I asked him why, Vetter said. He explained as the AD, he got to be the coach of all coaches. He gets the opportunity to reach others and touch, influence a lot more people than just a group in his sport. I had never thought about that before, and it really struck me as something I wanted to do. We wish you luck, Mr. Vetter. Well, let's take a peek at our weather. It looks like on Monday, our high is 83, partly sunny and humid with the low is 65. On Tuesday, high of 88. Looks like we're going to have rain chances on Wednesday and Thursday when our highs are in the mid-80s. Friday comes back around with mostly sunny and humid skies with an 83 degrees. So looks like pretty much 80s all the way around. So watch out for some rain on Wednesday and Thursday. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News Weekend Edition. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a great week.